I want to take a break from the podcast right now, and I want to give you a gift. And I want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code PODCAST10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. So we don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrate that end product to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on, because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not gonna have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com. Put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. Hey, hey, welcome back to the show. Today's guest is Aaron Alexander. He's a manual therapist and movement coach who has helped the world's best athletes, celebrities, and everyone in between to relieve pain, increase strength, and optimize their movement. In addition, he hosts a top-rated podcast called The Align Podcast, where he features the world's thought leaders on movement and wellness. He's also the author of The Align Method, 5 movement principles for a stronger body, sharper mind, and stress-proof life. It's such a pleasure to have Aaron on the show. Aaron, I am so stoked to have you on the podcast right now. I have, honestly binged your episodes with Max Lugavere, and your personality is super approachable and you're fun and you're funny. But I think more importantly, you're giving people the keys and sustainable tools to being a better version of themselves, whether that be their posture or their breathing or just integrating movement into their life. How did you come to become a movement coach?
Started off destroying myself. Thank you so much for making this happen.
We've been trying to make this happen for a while.
It's a lot of time to make it. So start off destroying myself through high degrees of insecurity, and then kind of wrapped all those different layers of insecurity with superficial muscles in the form of bodybuilding and all the supplements, and just really like obsessing over getting bigger. And so that went on for like age 14 or so. Okay. Was when it got like, when I got like really into all the things. Before that, like in my book, I describe myself as like something like a deranged adolescent giraffe or something growing up. Like my limbs were all over the place and my teeth were highly bucked apart and my hair was parted down the middle and I would just specifically kind of gel the front part because I figured nobody could see anything beyond just the front.
What you saw in the mirror was taken care of.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. And so turned into like lots of insecurity. Weird things. My dad started getting into like drugs and he ended up like going to prison for a whole slew of different things. Now he's like out and getting married. I'm going to his wedding next month and it's very exciting. But all that kind of happened in a similar time frame. And so that translated, I think, to me wanting to compensate with the physical appearance of strength, and which now I see that pretty ubiquitously throughout like Western culture, especially with like young adolescent men, where it's just like, just get muscles on the body. And then sometimes you find people that are really just passionate about their sport or surfing or martial arts or something like that. And then the body kind of more naturally puts itself together in a better way. But for me, I just wanted the appearance of looking really strong. Right. And so I did that in a very imbalanced manner, which led to, you know, just a lot of, you know, my shoulders started dislocating and I had, you know, just a bunch of injuries and chronic pain and stress and anxiety and all that stuff. But on the outside, I looked pretty good, you know, for a 16, 17 year old boy. You know, I looked like I had something good going on, but internally there was a lot more just chronic stress and pain and things of that as a product of me just wrapping on these piles of muscle on top of imbalance. And so that from there, I was doing personal training, working at LA Fitness and teaching people about, you know, bicep curls and all that stuff. And then moved to Hawaii. Hawaii, got into like surfing and jujitsu, went to massage school and then ended up meeting a girl, moved to Colorado, went to rolfing school. And it's been like an ongoing process of putting the parts back together essentially.
Wow.
That was like a whole life story. I apologize. You were probably going to be like...
That's exactly what I want. Because I think it's really interesting when people kind of come into their own or come in like find their calling, if you will. Mm-hmm. And really a lot of times it comes from a place of pain or insecurity or confusion or whatever it is. And then we are working through it ourselves. And if you keep working and keep working and kind of following your intuition and allowing yourself to be open, it's amazing, like sort of what you can learn and how you can affect change for other people. So that they're not dealing with, you know, taking loads of supplements from GNC and loading muscles on their body that don't actually feel good, but don't actually feel good in their own skin. So what can you, I mean, looking back now, yes, what advice do you have for, you know, I'm a mom, I have a toddler, a young boy named Sebastian, and I'm pregnant with my second son. You know, it's something that I've had a lot of my mom clients ask me, like, my son feels like he's too skinny, how can he gain weight? What, you know, what advice would you have for yourself looking back at high school Aaron about, you know, the way that your body looked and what you really needed?
I think... I did a podcast recently with Neil Strauss, like the game and the truth and various different things. He's really good with kind of cracking into people's psychological situation. And he did that with me. And one of the things that we talked about, he has a son called Seven. And in that, my question to him was, it was the same question. So I'm kind of hijacking his response. You know, so when you're a young child, you come out and you're like, you're on it. Like you're this natural, perfect expression of life and biology and, you know, all the things you're kind of perfect at that point. And so his intention, and then, I mean, we're always perfect and all that stuff, but in the beginning, you don't have all these layers of story of who you think you're supposed to be and what culture would accept or not accept. And it all kind of twists you into these knots. Like every cultural story that you think you have to live into, I think becomes like a little knot or a little contraction, you know? And so his approach with raising his son, which I don't have a son or daughter, was to try and just create enough spaciousness for that being to grow, and not kind of layer too much stories of what I think you should be or any of that stuff. And so it's like, how do we, how do we maintain that specialness and that authenticity and that light that you have as a young person while equipping you with the necessary tools to move into the world and not get like hit by a bus, but not feel like you are the tools. You know, so you equip the being with the tools and you acknowledge that, cool, here's this belt. You know, if you ever played like the video game Zelda, like the Zelda guy gets like the ocarina and then he like levels up on his sword and all that stuff. But he's not the ocarina. He's not the sword. You know, and so I think that would be the main thing is just not attempting to put any unnecessary pressure on my idea of what somebody should be and more just creating spaciousness and safety for that being to grow into whatever direction they want. Like it's like, I get this from... very few things that I say are original. So I apologize in advance, but I try to reference as much as possible. This is from Alan Watts. Talks about when you are walking through the woods, you know, you see different trees and some trees, you know, they might grow sideways or kind of squiggly or twist or one doesn't have a lot of leaves, one, you know, whatever. But you don't have like judgment on those different trees. You're just like, oh, cool, look at the tree. And in fact, when you see the trees that are growing quite strange, you're like, whoa, like how cool. But then when that's your son or your partner or yourself, instead of it being like, wow, what an amazing expression, you see as like, oh, that doesn't fit the story that it's supposed to be. Now I need to start hacking away or, you know, piling on all the GNC supplements or any of the things. So yeah, I think just like creating space and safety for yourself to express. And so as far as advice for myself, I think I would just try to listen. I think that would be it. I don't think I'd really have any advice. I think I'd just try to like, my advice would be
kind of like moms.
Yeah, it would be like subconscious, silent, deep listening. Like, okay, like I'm with you. Like, right. Cool, you're doing, you want to impress your friends by beer bonging a bunch of beers all at the same time. Like, okay, cool. Like all right, this is a part of your growth. Right. You know, I'm not mad at you for it.
It's squiggly and weird, like
it's
the
squiggly
trees,
and weird, so. You know. And then,
but make space for that. Yeah, I think it's important because children are pretty magical, and they do come out like they know. They go from tummy time to crawling to walking to running to being able to just like squat in the living room and play with their toys for 30 minutes. Yeah. You know, they really are so functional and so magical, and no one wants to give their kids their own layer of junk. Like, here, yeah. I'm going to put this on you, but that's great advice. Just like making space for your child to grow into their weirdness and know that that's okay.
And also it's a strange thing that like a child comes out as a spiral, like they come out as a circle and everything is squiggly, like you said, to use your own words, you know, and then the world that they exist in, Western culture specifically, you know, since probably like Greco-Roman times, the times of like right angles and pillars and all of that, before like pagan architecture was much more circular, much more like nature worshiping. But the world that our squiggly spiral biology comes into is one of lines. And so when you're a young person, sit a young person like pre-kindergarten on a chair and they're all over it. And then you're going to hang off the back and then do some cliffhanger thing. And then maybe they'll like, you know, sit for 6 seconds replicating what mommy does. And then they'll go right back to like rolling over and then they'll fall off. And they're just like, if you were to track, you put some type of, you know, GPS tracking devices on their like hands and feet and hips, it would just be like chaos.
Yeah. You know, like whereas if you've been in our house and seen my talk.
Right, exactly. Right. And so, and then that beautiful, immaculate chaos bumps itself into this line that is, sit on the desk, be still, stare into the book, stare into the screen, do as you're told. If you have to go pee, raise your hand. All right, now you get to tension. Now you sit in this room. Now you're covered in bathing in these artificial blue lights instead of a sun. You know, when your body wants to run and explore and taste and develop its microbiome and all that stuff, it's like, no, you sit in this hyper-sterilized room and you be still. You know, and I think that that's like it's a strange, strange world to get thrusted into. And so I think for young people, that are going through those scenarios, I think, like, for me personally, I have a ton of compassion and empathy for that, because that's like not easy. Could you imagine being a young person that's just all squiggles and then just come into like, boom, like straight wall. It's like,
you're
whoa.
A straight line now. I mean, yeah. I feel like I remember that experience. I feel like I was definitely a social kid. I was that kid whose report card said like, Kelly doesn't sit still. Kelly talks to all her friends. Kelly's always asking to leave the room. You know, right. I mean, like, I was an active child growing up. I like camped, I surfed, I skied, I snowboarded. Like, I was able to like climb trees and like ride on pine needles on a cardboard box, which
awesome.
Was a totally different experience. It was our version of sledding in California. It was just a park with pine trees. But those kind of experiences and like getting dirty and play, like, I worry about Sebastian's generation, baby two's generation. Like, everything is so planned and structured for these kids. Like, here's your music class. Like, here's your gymnastics class. Like, I want him to be moving and constantly using his body and getting wild, being wild. Cause like, that's kind of what you preach. And even as adults, it's like, how do we go back to that childlike behavior and start to incorporate movement throughout our whole day?
Yeah. Well, even if it's just, so there's all the psycho-emotional that development that is a product of the way that you move. But there's also just like the very obvious musculoskeletal nervous system development of when you're going through those squiggles, you're taking your body through this, you know, this exponential possibilities of adaptation where you fall and you twist and you're body, your nervous system is training how to drive itself the same way that your immune system trains how to develop itself through exposure. And so if you cut yourself out of everything, then all of a sudden your body has nothing to grow into. And so we have like, I think one of the most dangerous things that a person could do from my non-parent perspective, so I pardon me for talking without having a kid, but is being like too much of a helicopter parent, where you don't allow the child the opportunity to fall and to, you know, go through all those different moments where it's like, oh, that was a learning experience. And so the longer that you keep that person from developing in a natural way and making mistakes, you know, the more you start to set that person up for potentially a way bigger mistake when you weren't around. So it's like those micro mistakes are so important. And when we put people, you know, humans, kids, into environments where naturally they'd be running and they'd be doing, you know, rough and tumble play, and they'd be learning, you know, they're learning essentially like how far can they push boundaries emotionally with somebody? They slapped me. They got mad at me because I pushed too much. Okay, cool. I had a learning experience. Yeah. You know, like, oh, when that happened to me, that hurt. I don't want that to happen again. Okay, a learning experience.
Right.
Whereas if when you put somebody into kind of like a sterilized classroom environment where you have space between each person and then you sit in this position that's fairly unnatural. We can talk about more about like how to sit in a way that's actually more productive for your body. What's happening in that time frame, if you do it for an excessive amount of time, a little bit of time of anything is fine. It's just another opportunity to learn. When it becomes overly repetitive and becomes 12 years of a person's life and then 4 more years of a person's life and then they get the office job, that body, their capacity to adapt to a whole array of situations starts to atrophy, and then they become dangerous to be inside of their own bodies. You know, and so if you can allow a person to live in a little bit more of like, you know, just like a little more natural environment, which you can turn your home and your office and all of that into a place that is a bit more natural in quotations, it allows the body to naturally start to adapt and learn and grow on a daily basis. But the more common American model is we kind of allow that atrophy to go as long as we possibly can because we seek comfort. We've like killed the game on finding comfort. It's unbelievable how amazing Western culture and modern technology has a job that we've done with seeking comfort. It's like, it's really cool. But within that, we did such a good job that comfort now has kind of put us into this place of of atrophy. Yeah. You know, and so adding just a little bit, and what that atrophy ends up looking like is, you know, it looks like maybe diabetes, or it looks like maybe obesity, or it looks like depression, or it looks like anxiety. I have all this energy in my body. I don't really know why. I feel like I'm coming out of myself. It's like, well, when was the last time you ran as fast as you could? Almost like you're running out of yourself, but you're kind of dispersing that energy a little bit. When was the last time you wrestled with somebody? When was the last time you did something that was really like, it was really scary, and you got to kind of like this, you pushed your boundaries and you started to regain trust in yourself because you managed to get yourself out of that situation. And so all of those situations that I think inherently we want to avoid, at one point in time, they were unavoidable and they were baked into culture, and you had a rite of passage and you lived in this world that was like, that's just the way that you live. You know, now, because we've done such an excellent job at outsourcing all of those potential dangers out to technology, it's unnatural for the human organism. And so we can talk about some real world things that we can start to integrate into our daily lives that aren't like you're doing backflips off of motorcycles or anything, or howling at the moon. Like, right. It's just, you can clean your office a little bit and make it a little bit more natural.
Right. Well, I want to get to all of your lifestyle tips for people, because I do want to, thinking about the fact that I'm in like a short-term rental with a toddler and a soon-to-be baby, and I'm looking at like, okay, like buying a house and creating an environment that, you know, I don't want my kids to be on I want a comfortable couch, but I also want like, I don't know, floor meditation pillows and yoga mats and like places for them to like play and move their body. Like we have... For Bash's birthday, I just got him a wobble board that like can be something he can play on and flip over and climb on. Cause I was just like, he loved those classes where he could like run and jump and play and be in like those foam rooms and fall over or whatever, which is great for a helicopter parent. Cause you're like, break your face on foam, bud, whatever you want to do. You know, like he needs it. I know he needs it. And like getting outside and all that. But it's funny that you mentioned that most humans are so uncomfortable in that position. I think back to even just, and this is funny because you aren't a mom or a dad, but like to be a mom and to go to Mommy and Me and to go to like your birthing classes and everyone's sitting on the floor and you come into a room and sometimes they have a little puff you can sit on, but most of the time it's like, okay, everyone sit down and like cross-legged, and you look around the room and it's like, you know, mostly like average 30 something people, you know, 30 year olds, and everyone looks like ridiculously uncomfortable. You know, people like half the people in the room have like back problems. They're standing up, they're needing to like uncross their legs and they're slumped over. And I mean, it's a problem. And I mean, what do you think the culprit is? How do we fix it? What can we do? Because I want to be the mom who can sit on the floor, no problem, and not need to like change my position every 2 minutes.
Yeah. So as you're sitting on the ground, which is, that's one of the, I have a whole chapter in the Align Method book of, you know, how to do that, why it matters. You know, and so there's one of the tests that I put in the book. I break down more thoroughly in there. It's been, you know, a little like 6 months since I've really like gone through the test. But it's called the sit rising test. And it was a study that was done in Brazil, I believe. And they followed people from, I actually did look at this recently. They followed people from, I think it was age 51 to 83, something in that range. And they followed them for 6.3 years. I remember this. And they had them go through this sit rising test, which is really simple. Start off in a standing position, and then you sit your butt all the way down into a cross-legged crisscross applesauce position, and then you stand back up. And what they found within that test was they followed these people for the next 6.3 years. They found that people that could go through that full range of motion, I don't remember the exact specific statistics of how more likely they were to die during that time frame, but it was significant. I don't want to just make up some random number, but significantly higher percentage chance of mortality just based off of literally every touch point that they needed to use. So when you were getting up or getting down, if you had to put your hand down on the ground once, that would be a reduced point. If you had to put your knee down, if you had to put your other hand down. And so the people that scored the lowest scores on that, they were some very high percentage chance very high likelihood of dying during the duration of that study. The people that had higher scores, they ended up being way more likely to live. In fact, none of those people actually passed away during that time frame. You know, and so that's one of those things that it's like, it's just a really simple indication of your vitality. The fact that your joints function in a good way, it's an indication, one, that you have good neurological function. And so your brain, you know, it's bootstrapped to your movement body. You know, and your skin and your brain, they both come from the same dermal layer called the ectoderm. Now, so your skin is a continuation of your brain. Now, and so your movement, your muscles, they're a continuation of your endocrine system. They release a whole slew of different proteins and various different chemicals that just the way that your adrenal glands do and the various different glands that you have through your body. So when you're pumping and twisting and turning that musculature of yours, you're literally, it's like you're juicing these glands. You're making yourself a more vital person just by turning the pump on through your movement. You know, and so something that we've outsourced out is that range of motion, essentially below your hips down to the floor, like a below a chair level, 3.5-4 feet up, down to the floor. That's been wiped off the face of Western culture. Whereas the foundation of your humanity has been you do a deep squat. You don't need to necessarily look back into some hunter-gatherer ancestral encyclopedic thing to find this. Just go any other country or hang out with any child. And it's just like, oh, of course. Like, yeah, when you want to rest, you're waiting at the bus stop, you're waiting for your food, you're looking at your cell phone now these days, you get down to a deep squat and you kind of look down there. As you're doing that, you're taking your ankles through a full range of motion, you're taking your knees to that full flexion, you're opening, expanding those pelvic floor muscles so they can recontract and go through. You're pumping your whole system. You know, and so, you know, diapers are becoming, they're slowly beginning to exceed the diaper industry. The adult diaper industry is starting to exceed that of the baby diaper industry. And so as you grow into an old person, it's becoming more and more common that, like, of course you pee your pants a little bit, incontinence. And it's like, that's not a natural, you don't just see primates in nature just like, oh, yep, they pee themselves now. You know, and so as we are going through these natural ranges of motion for our body, it acts as like a tuning mechanism. So every day, if you play the guitar, you play, you know, the harp, any kind of string instrument, piano, at some point you need to retune those strings. You know, so the guitar, you might need to retune it almost every time you play. And so in your physical body, every time you go out into the world and say, sit at a desk for a while, or just stand in place in a line for a while, or hunch over and stare into your cell phone for a while, that's like you are playing the instrument. Typically you're playing, if those are the positions you're doing, especially if you're like hunching over a screen, it might be kind of like a sad song that you're playing from a postural perspective, at least, so we can talk about what that means.
Yeah.
You know, so you're playing that sad song, and then you need time to come back. And you might be playing a happy song too. You might be dancing and moving while you're on the phone or on the screen or whatever. You might be very happy about your screen time. I've got nothing against screen time. but then you need to go back and you need to retune your guitar. And the way that you've naturally done that, the onboard tuning mechanism that you've had since the beginning of ever, is spending time on the ground. For example, you know, so when you go down on the ground, you're squatting, your like all the ranges of motions we already spoke of, you're circulating all that lymphatic fluid and blood and all that stuff out of your lower compartments. It's an easier way for your body to digest food, is another interesting thing about that, because you have more blood to be able to circulate in through your viscera. So if your legs go up, if you've ever had an injury, you know, say you injured your ankle, for example, what's any PT going to tell you? To say, okay, like, you know, it's all right, maybe do some compression.
Yeah.
What's compression? Oh, compression is that muscular contraction. Every time you contract your muscles, that's a mini compression. You're pushing out the old stuff and you're bringing in new. Okay, what else are we going to do? I think it'd be a good idea for you to raise your legs up above the height of your heart.
Yeah, elevate.
Oh, why would we do that? Oh man, oh, it's because we want to, no big deal. We just want to get that old fluid out of your lower compartments so it can heal. And we want it to pull back up into your heart and poof, get one big pump back through. That body is an efficient body. It's going to heal quickly. The body that sits still and stagnates, that's the body that's going to start to develop various different forms of disease. And, you know, it could be a blood clot. It could be some type of blood sugar issue. You know, so exercise is very helpful with your blood sugar levels. And so thinking of your body as, you know, just think of those positions as not just like, oh, this is weird or uncomfortable. One, make them very comfortable is a big thing. So if you want to start to spend some time on the ground, which I highly recommend doing it every day, you could get a comfy floor cushion. You could get a comfy rug. You could get some of those like Moroccan poofs or something, and make a little area in your living room. You know, ideally maybe near a window would be great. So you're getting that natural sunlight coming in. Maybe you could start to eat breakfast and have like a low coffee table. And maybe you could put some of those poofs or cushions or something like that in front of there. So then naturally we're not adding new stuff into your day. We're saying, do everything that you're already doing. Let's just make a subtle tweak. So you start to add tuning into your day. You know, and so just spending a little time on the ground each day it's one of the most helpful things any person can do for their body. And it's, you know, completely free. So I'd recommend it. That's what I'm saying.
I probably have spent more time on the floor since becoming a mom than ever, because it's like every morning we're having coffee and playing with toys on the floor, but making that more of like a functional movement. Maybe I'm in a deep Shiva squat. Maybe I'm, right, you know, instead of just crisscross applesauce or, you know, cross-legged, yeah, with bash, but I definitely want to make sure that I want to be functioning. I don't want to be one of those people in the study that can't get up without 10 points of contact, right, because I see it with like aging parents, and I see it with people's, clients, parents, where, you know, it's like everything was going great and then this happened and they broke their hip and then they can't take care of themselves anymore and they're needing to be hospitalized. And it's so much about being functional in the long run and, yep, the tools to keep yourself functional. I remember like going, I was a soccer player for a long time. So when you're talking about ice, what we used to coin ice, right? Wasn't it like, right,
rest, ice, compression, elevation. Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Which now the guy that came up with rice, he changed the ice to, just being compression. I believe he changed it to compression. But anyways, he took the ice part out because, okay, ice is helpful as like an analgesic and all those things if you need to get right back into the game. But it can also start to kind of like stunt and slow down healing. Anyways, totally separate.
Interesting, tangent, but like really good to know.
Yeah, yeah, right.
No, I mean, it's great. But I remember being like in a certain position for playing that sport for such a long time and then getting really into yoga and loving deep squats. Like, really loving the feeling of it, loving it throughout my pregnancy, bringing my husband, and he could go only so far. I love him so much, but it was always like, that was like one of that and pigeon pose were like the two hardest poses where he was like, these are miserable. And is there a way if someone is listening and they've, you know, they can't do a deep squat or they, you know, can't do a pigeon pose. Are there, other than like a deep squat, are there positions that people should be practicing daily that will help with their range of motion?
Yeah. So one, in that room in your home, someplace, ideally you have enough space to like starfish out on the floor, someplace in your house, maybe your backyard. You just have a place where you can just reach your arms out and you can like roll a steamroller over your partner or, you know, play with your kids or any of that stuff. Like, you really, if you have kids, just hang out with them and get a little notepad and like be like, okay, cool, he's doing a steamroller across the floor. That seems okay. His biology is probably suggesting that that's wise in order to circulate fluids and engage his nervous system and all that. Okay, perfect. What's he doing now? Oh, he's kind of like did a roll thing. Great. You know, okay, now he's sitting with this perfect erect spine. It's like there's a string pulling his head up into the sky. Oh, it's because he doesn't have all of these big, strong, masculine compensatory muscles to hold him into these imbalanced positions. He just needs to find perfect alignment with gravity. And so you do that as a young person, like off the get-go. A way to help someone that has more of those layers of kind of like stiffness that have built up, which I started off as a very stiff person, by the way. So you can see, I mean, if you looked in any of my stuff on Instagram, where I'd be like, oh my God, like, you know, must have been flexible for a long time. Like that's all new stuff. I was like stiff, rigid bodybuilder guy. You know, so one of the things that you could do if you care about the deep squat specifically would be you could just raise your heels up. You know, so if you actually want something that's like a routinized, regimented, like, okay, I want to work on this joint range of motion, spend some time and get your feet. I have videos about this as well, but get your, you know, put some books down on the ground. You know, so that would be something that you could play with, is raise those heels up so you don't have to go through such a major range of motion in the ankles. And that will make it so that you can go a little bit deeper into that squat. The other thing would be just generally spending, explore. If every day you are doing anything on the ground, you are naturally mobilizing and circulating all of those joints. With time, if you just do, you know, in the book, I recommend 30 minutes a day for someone that's like new to this. I'm doing this, I've been alternating legs. I'm like on a knee as I'm doing this. And I have the computer set up on my cold plunge, the sauna in the background here.
Amazing. You look like you're sitting in it. You look like you're sitting at a table, but definitely not.
Yeah, the whole time you can see this is my world here. So I'm like, you know, I got down on the edge here. And, you know, so that's, you'd think like, this is kind of like technically work. I'm technically at work in a way, which is super amazing. You know, and I have some notes here. I have my computer in front of me, but I'm outside. I have exposure to the blue sky, so I can look out into the distance, which is very healthy for your nervous system and your eye health. You know, I'm being exposed to various different temperatures. Maybe it's a little bit cold. Maybe it's a little bit warm. So my body needs to show up and do that whole thermoregulation dance, which is a form of exercise, a form of fitness. And I'm alternating sides here. So I'm massaging my knees. I'm going back on my toes every now and again. And so this whole time following the Align method, you know, I'm like, cool, I did my 30 minutes just in this conversation. And so there's a way we can start to integrate that into your daily life. And if you do go through and just spend some time, maybe eat breakfast down on the ground, you could do a straddle position. You could do a 90-90 position where both legs are kind of, you know, in like 90 degree angles. Any of those guys, make sure that you're raising your hips up above the height of your knees while you do these things. When you raise your hips up above the height of the knees, you'll feel your pelvis slightly start to tilt forward ever so slightly. So you'll be on the front edge of those sit bones, the ischial tuberosities in your butt cheeks there. If you do that, then you are stacking your spine up for stability and success. So that would be a major takeaway, is when you are sitting on the ground, if you choose to venture down to the ground, raise your hips up higher than you think is necessary. Most people, if you go to yoga class, they at the end, they do the meditation thing and they're all super uncomfortable in their bodies. They're hunched over and they got forward head posture and they're like, you know, they've got their little mudras going and they're like, oh God, like, okay, I can hold this for another 45 seconds. If you raise your hips up, so that, just general rule, if you put a ball onto your thighs, it would roll down towards your knees. You will immediately feel far more comfortable in your lower back and your spine. You know, so that would be a major thing, is one, just start doing anything and that will start to snowball into more capacity. And a general rule to follow, make it really comfortable. And a way that you can make it really comfortable, other than just getting a comfy rug, is make sure your hips are up above the height of your knees. If you follow those basic principles, you're on the road to success of not being the grandfather or father that's fallen to the ground and can't get up, and you have to call your kids or your grandkids to come and, you know, save you and take you to a assisted living home. Which, that's the number one leading reason that elderly need assisted living, is I fall and I can't get up. Wow. That has nothing to do with humanity. That's 0% human. That's a Western aberration. And that is absolutely avoidable. And the way that you avoid it is you start to take part in those ranges of motions today. You know, so if you leave a house, if you leave your house for X amount of time, you might start to get squatters that might stay in that home. You know, and so you need to be in your house. Every day when you're in your house, what do you do? You know, I sweep, you know, and I go through and I'll wipe the calendar. I made dinner. It's like everything was so clean and organized. I made dinner and it's like a wreck.
Yeah.
Like, how is it? It was so good. Like 45 minutes. It's a wreck. Yeah. And there's like dust bunnies everywhere. I'm like, I just swept. It's like, well, it's an active process of living in your house. Right. It's also an active process of living in your body. And it doesn't need to be tedious work if you start to make subtle little shifts in the way that you live that are actually much more comfortable. And then what you'll find if you do become a person that gets out of the habit of sitting in a chair for 8 hours a day, the idea of sitting in a chair for 8 hours feels like disastrous. It feels like the worst thing you could do. Now, and so that would be one thing I would like be forewarned. If you do start to adapt more of this lifestyle, the other side doesn't feel good. And then once again, statistically, it doesn't look good either. So, you know, if I were you, I would go for it.
Yeah. Start now so that we're not having to call our grandkids to help us move our body and get up.
Right.
When you think about it, because I mean, that's pretty interesting. Just that tip that you've given, that lifting your heels or lifting your hips,
yeah,
both of which makes it easier for you to have that range of motion and or maintain that range of motion, sit in that position or posture for a longer period of time, which I'm assuming is beneficial for range of motion because it's probably better that you'd be sitting there uncomfortable for a little bit longer than just giving up after a minute.
In order to create change, there might be a little bit discomfort to start. You know, so I'm by no means trying to create some, you know, the Align Method program. Like you don't need to do anything and you'll just get better. It's like,
there
might be scenarios where you're like, you know what? This is like, there's a little adaptation here. You know, if you want to do some Wim Hof cold plunge, huffing and puffing stuff, it's not going to be just that, you know, it just happens. It's like, no, you gotta go to the place. You got to do the breathing thing. Breathing thing is a pain in the ass. Yeah. You got to get into the pool. You get just, oh, you're like, oh my God, why am I here?
Right.
And then afterwards, you're like, oh, it's the best I felt. And I don't remember the last time.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's the same thing when you are hiking in the mountains. You know, if you want to go to the place where there's not all the bullshit tourists that are throwing wrappers and taking pictures and all this stuff, you need to go further.
Right.
Like if you want to have your highest expression of your experience of your life that may or may not only be one time through, you need to push more, you know? Right. And so if you can get into that place where you start to change your perception of discomfort and make it be something like, oh, if I'm experiencing what feels to be healthy discomfort, and anyone listening, I would hope by now you know the difference between healthy and unhealthy discomfort. You can start to change your perception. It's like, oh no, that's indicative of progress.
Right.
You know, so perception is everything. And so if you can start to change your perception that instead of you just being, you know, there's like somebody said, easy decisions now, hard decisions later, hard decisions now, easy decisions later. So if you make the hard decisions now of, you know what, I have this lazy boy sofa here and I've got my TV and I've got the coffee table in front of that. I can put my feet up on that. You just kind of smush into this thing, fast forward. I get some Cheetos and nacho cheese and just kind of feed my face. And then I can consume some stuff on the social media and I'm just like, whoa, like consume, consume, consume. You know, like that's a way to do it.
Right.
It's very comfortable, very accessible. And in fact, social media and the people that sold you all those things, they're actually vying for you to make that decision.
Right.
Then there's the other side of that where it's like maybe you do the Wim Hof cold thing. Doesn't cost you anything. You leave all of those things. You walk out in the woods. You huff and puff and you jump in a row. No one got paid.
Yeah. And you were uncomfortable, but you didn't
atrophy
and you grew.
And you grew.
Yeah.
So it's all perception. Whereas the person that gets so deeply saturated in scenario A, they could think of scenario B of doing a pigeon stretch for their legs or, you know, getting cold or hiking up a mountain is being like, that sounds absolutely uncomfortable and terrible.
Right.
So if you can start to become the person that's like, oh no, I my friends from Yes Theory, their catchphrase is seek discomfort. It's like, no, I seek discomfort. Then it's like you're making those hard decisions now in order to reap easier decisions later.
Such good stuff. What are, you know, you mentioned the Wim Hof breathing method and cold plunging and moving your body and hiking further. When you talk about the Align method, what are the principles of the Align method?
Well, the publishers demanded that I break it down into 5 movements.
Don't you love publishers?
Which now I want to like redo the whole cover and everything, because I'm like, I don't want to be a cult leader, and it's more, it's bigger than 5 movement principles. You know, and so what it is, the 5 movement principles actually are quite valuable, because it is, I think it is helpful to break things down to like easy to grab handles for people. Yeah. One of the principles that if you do these 5 things, honestly, truly, it will change your life. And they're right in front of you. And it's like, it's just a matter of making these subtle little shifts. You know, so one of the things is just spending 30 minutes a day on the ground. I'd recommend more than that, but at least, you know, that could be you eat your lox bagel, whatever, maybe it's vegan, by a coffee table. And it's, you know, you sit up on a raised cushion, and while you're checking your emails or whatever, you're just in that position. While you are there, we break all this down in the floor sitting chapter. You could go through a few different positions. You could go 90-90 position, and you know, all the things that we already talked about. Another one that would make a massive difference in everyone's lives, if you just started to do this a little bit each day, was get your freaking arms up over your head. Any type of dance class you do, any type of yoga class you do, if you're paying a personal trainer, so many different exercises and asanas and all the things, you're putting your arms up over your head. What are you almost never doing in Western culture? Putting your arms up over your head.
Yeah.
And so, unless you're happy, unless you're excited, unless you're winning, then your arms go up.
Totally.
And so, it's just something, another principle that I'd recommend that every human body absolutely needs, just like going down to the ground, is your arms need to go up over your head. Ideally, you're using your hands to grab something. So I'm describing is just hanging. You know, so it's arguable, if you believe in evolution, that our ancestors were brachiating apes swinging through trees. And you know, the way that our hands are structured, the way that our clavicles are structured, we are built to reach up, grab, hang, move through stuff above us, whether it's trees or ladders, whatever. Our bodies are literally engineered to do that. Western culture has outsourced the necessity for that, because now you just reach down to grab an apple off of the grocery store table.
Yeah.
Whereas at one point you would reach up and you would locate the apple with your eyes, and you would climb and you would grab and you'd twist, and no, you'd probably work teamwork. You'd probably have another person down there. I'm going to throw down some apples.
Yeah.
You know, not to mention, you know, the changing of like cloning apples and all that stuff with time.
Right. But,
you know, just the act of reaching up and grabbing that apple, that is a part of your nutrition. Your movement is a part of your nutrition. It's not just food goes into face and now digestion begins. You know, peristalsis is movement. That's this undulation of those intestines moving that food through your body so it can get assimilated. And so when you're walking, you're digesting, you're circulating, you're moving those nutrients, moving all the vital fluids that are necessary for you to live. You know, so how that relates back to like your home and your office, just get a pull-up bar. Now, have a pull-up bar in between some hallway that you walk through with regularity. Could be your office, could be, I have one in my bedroom. So every night before I go to bed, I hang for, you know, sometimes 25 seconds, sometimes 90 seconds. So it depends if I'm like how spicy I'm feeling. I'm like, really want to go for it. But I do it multiple times throughout the day. I'll twist my spine out. I get my legs across the doorway, a couple of like little cracks from my spine. My whole spine goes, I'm like, okay, cool. Chiropractic adjustment. But instead of sitting in a car in that hunched over bucket seat position that is the problem, and then driving to the place, having someone manually move my body over to the side to get a couple adjustments, and then sitting back into that car that was the problem in the first place,
right,
and you know, back into my couch, I just hang a little bit.
I love it. Unless you are in a practice like a yoga practice that is requiring you to do sun salutations and throw your hands above your head and to have really that range of motion that a lot of us are losing based on hunching over our computer, hunching over our phone, like poor posture, hunching over our steering wheel. I mean, obviously you're making me want to do the monkey bars when I take Bash to the playground next, but like anytime I see monkey bars now, and I know there are a bunch of moms listening and like, I know there are a bunch of people listening who are going to get on Amazon and buy a pull-up bar, but that is such an easy applicable tool that you're not only are you giving yourself an adjustment, but you're opening up and you're aligning and kind of like having that counter movement of what you're doing all day long.
Yeah. And then it goes beyond just, okay, this is going to be better for my physiology, or it's going to be better for maybe my body's going to produce more serotonin or dopamine and all the things, or maybe it's going to be better for, you know, so my parents, or my kids, grandkids don't need to pick me up off of the ground someday. It's going to be better for right now just to make you a more attractive, confident human being. You know, so when your shoulders are hunched forward and your head is jutting forward in that kind of turtle head position, you know, the forward head posture stuff, you know, and your spine has that hunchback thing gone, and you know, maybe that will, you've got like your glutes aren't really turning on, so you got like white guy butt, maybe your knees are collapsing in. That's the body of a loser. Like, I hate to say it, but that's a losing body. You know, right. So when, and I mean, I'm trying to be gentle with this, but because that body can also go into a really strong position if it just makes some subtle changes. And when I say loser, I mean literally you lost. Like, you were running in a race and you thought you could make it and you lost. And you get to the end of the race and you go, oh, your head goes forward, your shoulders go forward, your spine collapses, your butt disengages, your knees collapse, and you become this collapsed structure. It's the body of a loser.
Right.
The body of a winner at the end of that race. Shoulders come back, head goes up long, arms might even go up in the air if you're really excited. You know, as your knees start to come out a little bit, which naturally engage your hips, engage your glutes, stabilizing your lower back. You know, 80% of Americans will experience chronic lower back pain in their life at some point. So perhaps if you naturally just went through these natural ranges of motion that, you know, nature would produce, maybe there's no reason for this nagging back sensation. You know, and so when you go and you win that race, your body goes into those positions of being a little bit more upright. The shoulders come back. You know, and so something that you can do to literally create structural change, there's a whole book called Shoulder Pain by a guy called Dr. John Kirsch, who is an orthopedic surgeon, and he would do surgeries for people for shoulder impingement syndrome. And what he found was he had a crazy statistic. He said 99% of the shoulder pain that he would work with would be cured just by going through a very simple hanging protocol, which I break down in the Align Method book. And then I kind of add my own little like Align things to it. But just each day, spending time taking your shoulders through that range of motion, decompressing the girdle, starting to open up some space for the thoracic spine, letting everything just drain out a bit. You start to literally change the structure of the shoulder girdle. So when you take your arms out of that hanging position, your arms naturally hang more into the position of a confident winner. The person that wins the race, the shoulders come back. And they say, wow, man, like there's something about that person. When I'm around, I'm like magnetized to them. What is it? But the people that you are magnetized to are not the people that their shoulders are collapsing forward and their heads kind of, and they're not going to make eye contact with you and their head's going down. And you know, they just look like there's this weight on them. Those are the people that culturally, they become like pariahs. We want to push away from that because we don't want to get sucked in. The people that we want to be around are the people that's like, man, you're like my anchor. Yeah. I just feel so supported around you. And it's, you're not taking anything from, you're just, oh, just, can you just be here with me for a second?
Right.
You know, it's like structurally, what is that person emanating from their body? Our brains process something like 40 bits of information consciously and something like 40 million bits of information subconsciously. So all the time, we're just consuming the world voraciously with our subconscious mind. And we're calculating and examining when a person walks into the room, what's their intention? How do they feel? How's their day? Are they dangerous? Do they have something for me? Are they part of my tribe? Are they a sexual partner? Like, you have all of this information going through. And the way that we visually gather that information is what is the postural patterns that person is expressing. And so if you take yourself through some of these very natural, easy, comfortable, like feel good ranges of motions with regularity, then the ball is always rolling for you. you move through life with momentum. The model that Western culture has taken is more this pill form, you know, which would make sense because, you know, we do a lot of things in that fashion. So now we want a pill form of fitness. The rest of my day and lifestyle does not matter because I did my 60-minute Zumba class. Yeah. You know, and so the person that I would rather have on my kickball team or whatever would be the person that I don't care if you do Zumba, I don't care if you do a Taibo class. Like, I want the person that is in their body with the highest concentration throughout the day. Like, if you're just the way that you walk down the street, think of that as like right now, maybe you're walking and listening to this. Can you start to notice how am I walking? What kind of signals am I sending out to the world? Because if you're a person that doesn't like to get robbed, for example, there's been some research. There was a study done where the researchers asked criminals that were in prison for violent crimes, you know, muggings and things of the sort. And they showed them a bunch of videos of people walking. And they said, like, who would your target be? You know, and you'd think like, okay, cool. This is no brainer. You know, the target's going to be like the small, old white woman, you know, or like somebody like little, tiny, like that's no brainer.
They can't fight you off. You can steal their purse.
Got it. It's like, no. If that small, tiny woman, you know, white, Asian, black, whatever color she had integrated movement patterns. It seemed like she knew where she was going. It seemed like the way that she moved, it was like her body was confident and put together. It wasn't kind of all cacophonous and dysregulated and kind of like lost or confused or any of those adjectives. That person that seems confident in their bodies, they don't want to mess with that person.
So
just you walking down the street, you're sending, you know, millions of bits of information through the way that you express yourself posturally. You know, so right now, if you're listening, which obviously you are, pay attention to what are your shoulders doing? What are your shoulders saying? What are your feet saying? If you're having a conversation with someone, start to notice the mannerism, their physical mannerisms. If their feet start to face the door, if their hips start to face the door, they're done with this conversation. It might be a great time, instead of trying to be a vampire and gather more conversation from them because you think you're creating more rapport. Rapport's over. You creating a rapport for that person would be letting them move on with their life. And then they move on and they say, wow, that person was sensitive. I liked that conversation. It was short, 20 seconds. Hey, how are you? You look great. Love your hair. Hips started to shift towards the door. Cool. He's out of there. Peace out. You know, as opposed to like, I gotcha.
Yeah. You know? But wait, I have more to say.
Right. Exactly. And so if you could start to pay attention, and the way that you start to be able to perceive other people's bodies is first by perceiving your own body. Notice the way your body communicates in conversation. It will do certain things subconsciously. If you start to make this a little bit more conscious, you can look down and observe yourself and say, I'll be danged. When I'm not interested, I start looking away from this person. You know, when I want to leave, you know, I'll do something with my hands or scratch my face, even though I don't have an itch. You know, so like you are a movement machine. Everything you think expresses out through movement. You know, so if you want to start to change the way that you think, the way that you feel, the way that you show up in relationships, the way you show up in business, a really great entrance point is through the way that you move through the world. And if you start to bring greater attention into the way that you move in daily life through doing these simple practices that we break down in the Align Method, slash, you know, Eddie, but just go for a hike. You know, you don't even need the Align Method. Just go for a hike outside and nature will move your body. You know, so if you start to integrate those basic things in your daily life, it's amazing what happens to, you know, the way that you feel, your business, your level of confidence. If your level of confidence goes up, then all of a sudden the people that you surround yourself with, then they start to become a little bit more maybe successful. You know, Jim Rohn quote, you're the product of the five people you spend most time with. The way that you spend time with people that are leveled up beyond your present moment is you got to level yourself up, you know, and the way that people, the initial detection point of, is this person a part of my tribe, is how do they move? It's the first thing that you see. And so if you want to create good rapport with somebody, notice how you walk in the room. And a great thing to do, I'll shut up in a second, is before you walk into a room, loosen up your body. If you're going in a room and you're very nervous, I've had this experience. I've had it less these days, but especially if I'm like speaking, I'm like a terrible wreck. Like I've literally like blacked out on stage. I've never actually done that, but I've thought I was going to do it many times. I've almost blacked out in interviews. It's very strange. I'm a very nervous, anxious creature. But something that I used to, I would say almost like suffer from much more was like social anxiety. I'd go into a party or whatever and I'd be outside and I'd just be anxious because I was so concerned about what people would think about me. And what I could, typically what modern people will do before that experience is you'll probably just hunch over, stare into your cell phone, check your notifications, you know, and just kind of wait at the door. And then the cell phone's also an indication that like you're occupied, you're doing things, you're loved. So that sends that signal out to the world. So subconsciously, it's like me being stuffed into my phone somehow is a little bit better than me just standing.
Yeah. You're just standing there. People are like, what's
like,
that
oh,
guy?
Is that a loser? Does he have any friends on his cell phone? Where are your Facebook friends, bro? Yeah. So what you could do before you go into that room is you could shake your shoulders out a little bit. Maybe you could hang off a tree branch or, you know, stretch your shoulders out off the side of your car. Maybe go for a quick little jog and just kind of shake your body up. Maybe do some breath work stuff. You know, maybe do a couple lunges or a deep squat, open up your hips. And if you walk into that room, like it's like, you know, think of like any, you know, mountain lion or any kind of, you know, critter in nature, you know, ideally some type of somebody that moves with confidence. They don't need to like stretch and they don't need to before that they're like, they can be resting and then just go straight into full sprint hunting. It's because the way they move on a regular basis. And so before you go into that situation, I would say try to level your body up to being a little bit more like cheetah-like.
Yeah.
You know, so when you walk into the room, like, damn, my hips feel good. Like I feel strong. You know, like my feet are like, boom, like I'm on the ground.
Yeah.
And my breath, it's like, it's all in my ribs. It's all in my diaphragm. Like like, hey, what's up? My name's Kelly. You know, it's like, that's a totally different vibe than going in and being just post cell phone, you know, notification, comatose type vibe.
Right. It's so interesting. And if all else fails, and if the only thing you take away from this podcast is if you have better posture walking, you will not be robbed. Right?
Much less, lesser likelihood.
No.
Not a guarantee.
No, I mean, this is such, it's such good stuff because I remember learning about power posing before before I started doing like public speaking and like the super, I think it was Superman or Superwoman pose or whatever.
Superwoman, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just like, all right, I have a big interview. I'm going to go in the bathroom first. I'm going to stand there with my hands on my hips, like a superhero and just check myself out for a few minutes and know that everything's okay. Like it's just pausing, taking a minute, like being ready for it because we aren't cheetahs. We aren't always ready for it.
You're not always ready for it. But the reason that the person that does integrate these really simple principles into their daily life, it's nothing in, you know, any of my work am I asking, for the most part, asking people to do more stuff. I'm saying do exactly what you're doing, but just make this subtle little shift. You know, and you can make that subtle little shift. We're not adding another 60-minute program or whatever. Me saying, spend 90 seconds total in a day hanging. That's just throughout the day. When you walked through, you were already walking through that doorway. You just swung through.
Right.
You know, you were already going to eat your breakfast. You were already going to check your emails. I'm just saying, maybe what if you checked your emails, maybe outside? Maybe you put a yoga mat down or a blanket and you exposed your body to the sun. Maybe you took your sunglasses off. Maybe you took your shirt off. Now, maybe you got crazy. You got naked in your backyard and you exposed your whole body to the sun for the first time in who knows how long, you know, while you did work. You know, because all of those things that seem really weird, you know, weird, the original meaning of weird means to be in control of one's fate. It's an old English word. And so a weird person is the person that I want to have on my team. The person that is just a part of the sheep, you know, they're just a part of the herd. As soon as herd mentality starts to manifest, I'm like, what's going on here? I feel like we're being sold something. You know, that's not like a conspiracy theory thing. It's just, I think our level of intelligence almost starts to decrease the more we start to kind of come into that like riot herd mentality. So if everybody, if the whole pack is doing a thing, I'm kind of like, huh, what's it like the outer edges of this? Right. You know, when was the last time I did my email work butt naked out of my porch? Getting some sun. I haven't done that often. Last time I did that, it's been a little while actually, but I've done it this year. Yeah. it's a great experience. I highly recommend it.
Okay, well let's give people the hit list, because we got 30 minutes on the floor. We have 90 seconds of hanging.
Yeah.
Those are two.
So I won't break down all the five movement principles in the book. The book is much more than five movement principles. There's like a whole section about how to tap into your senses. You know, so the way that you use your eyes is a part of your fitness. You can literally use your eyes and use your breath and various different senses in your body like toggles for your nervous system. So if you want to feel more excited, more focused, more engaged, you can do things with your vision, such as focus your vision. You know, so what happens when you are, say you're out and you say you see a predator, you know, or you're out in the street and you get this sense of like something's going on here. Your vision will go out from the panorama, taking the whole world in, and I'm in Paris. It's beautiful. Wow. But your visual muscles are a part of that orchestra. And this is something to play with would be if you are working at home, just take a break from staring into your screen. And so specifically take a break by looking out a window and using your panoramic vision. When you use your panoramic vision, it's calming your nervous system. When you're using that focused myopic vision, it's activating. So if you're a person that's really spacey and kind of all over the place, you could have that person maybe do some eye exercises that they're focusing on one specific point. If you're really stressed out, you're anxious, you're going into that meeting thing or the speaking thing or the party, you're like, God, I feel like I'm going to have a panic attack. Focus on taking in the whole room. I'll almost allow your vision to kind of like blur, like space out, and then focus on your exhalation. So coming back into the breathing part, as you are breathing, every breath that you take is tied into the way that you think and the way that you feel. If you get scared and you breathe in, when you get scared, you go, you'll breathe in, the breath will be up around your neck, your shoulders will raise. When you feel like you've made it, you've arrived, you're safe, you're comforted, you'll go, ah, wow, look at this. Right? So you're parasympathetic nervous system, that autonomic nervous system, which isn't autonomic at all because you're in control of it based off the way that you conduct yourself and the way that you change your environment. It's telling the rest of your physiology that, oh, wow, we're calm. So next time, just try this little tip. If you're feeling stressed, allow your vision to space out and then focus on your exhalation. Don't do the take a deep breath thing. Take a deep breath thing is misleading. You need to take a deep breath out. Yeah. You know, so that would be a simple thing just to kind of get into, like, your movement is much more than just hanging and spending time on the ground. Your movement goes into the way that you use your eyes, the way that you use your breath, you know, your skin, your sense of touch, all of that will all change the way that you feel. So the bullet pointers, I just wanted to throw in, pay attention to your breath, pay attention to your vision as a part of the bullet points.
Such applicable tools for people, especially now, because I feel like most people are getting stuck at their desk and then they're going from their desk to their couch because their favorite workout facility is closed, or they're working from home and Zoom schooling with their kids, or just really just be behind a desk and or stuck in their apartment or their house, and they're not taking advantage of nature, or they don't have access to it. So just even getting that movement in throughout the day
and bring nature into your house. You know, so I acknowledge that not everybody is going to go outside naked and check their email on their deck. And I don't think anybody even needs to do that. I'm just being like silly and cute with that.
Yeah.
But if you did, I do think it's quite a good idea. Yeah. You could bring plants into your house. You know, that's what NASA did. They did a study where they broke down the top aerating, oxygenating plants, and you can look up, we almost put this in the book, but we ended up taking it out, but you can look up like NASA oxygenating plants study. And you can see there's like a whole list of plants that literally they are not only filtering your air, like I'm in California, as are you, where there's been a lot of smoke. So they're filtering the air, but they're also oxygenating the air. So they're literally, they're making your air more electric and vital to breathe, to consume. Also, people that, I know you need to wrap this up, so I apologize.
No, I'm not, I don't need to wrap it up.
Oh, good.
You're my last one.
As we're talking, we're like, we've cracked the cork. I'm like, there's so many things I need to tell you.
No, I mean, I know that like we joke about a publisher like wanting like hit lists or whatever, but I just find when something is very clear, because I've had a practice for so long, that if something is clear, easy to add to your life without adding to your to-do list, which you've done, right? Yeah. I mean, eat your cereal, answer your emails on the floor, hang when you're walking through your hallway. These are not, it's not rocket science, but it will change the way that you move and breathe and, you know, your vision and all of that. Like those are the things that people will take from this podcast and go, cool. And if they are in California, because our air quality does suck, we'll throw that NASA list in the podcast show.
Throw it in there.
So that people can get, can bring nature into their house. So, I mean, that was something that was, I mean, that's why I'm in a short-term rental right now, because we were in LA, in a city, in an apartment for such a long time. And then having a toddler that like wants to run and play and having parks closed, I was like, he needs something. Like we need space. And if I'm going to be doing things virtually with clients, like at least we have access to green and water and waves or whatever it is. And it's short term, it's what we can afford right now. But it was important to us because you really have to sometimes change your daily life to make these things a little bit easier. But the cool part is the tools you're giving are not, I mean, they aren't difficult to start incorporating.
No. And all the systems start to stack up. Yeah, and so that's what I did with the creation of the Align Method was just give people the poo-poo platter of here's all the things that in the last 16 years working with clients, the 5 years doing the podcast, getting to just hang out with people that I find to be like really inspirational, like the Laird Hamiltons of the world. Like, how are you doing what you're doing? You know, being able to aggregate a really simplistic list of like, here's the things that if you do any of these things, it will immediately right now change the quality of your life, you know, and make it very simplistic, very, very easy to understand for anybody, you know. And I think that too often the way that we communicate is in a way that it's kind of over the heads of most people. And I try to check myself on that because anytime I'm doing that, I think it's typically an indication that I'm feeling insecure and I'm kind of trying to I'm like pedestalizing myself by using some polysyllabic word that's like, there was no need, like one out of, 20,000 people will understand that word. It's literally just some form of like mysticism, you know, where I'm like, how about we just let go of all of that and just talk to each other as people and say like, here's the simple things that you got to be doing. Are you doing this? Yes or no? You know, and so with the creation of that, like that was the goal, is to make something really, really simple. But the last thing in relation to the plant stuff, I apologize for dog barking. I don't know if you can even hear that actually.
Oh, good.
With plants, people that are patients in hospitals, I think it was for gallbladder surgery, I believe. You might have heard this already. If they had access to a window where they could see nature or even having a painting of nature, they ended up being released, I think it was 2 days earlier than patients that didn't have access to that. And the similar thing would happen, same, but kind of different. If people have, this is kind of in relation to you having the ability to kind of be empowered and take your decisions in your own hands and go to another place. Patients that had the control over how much pain medications they would use would end up using less. So when you feel out of control, you feel the need to medicate more. When you feel, these are kind of two separate subjects, but they're both kind of interesting and relevant.
Yeah.
Just that idea of doing something that makes you feel empowered, a little thing that just makes you feel like, you know what? Like I am in control of my life. For you, it was like, I don't need to be here. I'm going to go to this other place. I'm going to work remote anyway. I would imagine that would be something that would actually trickle into affecting your biology and maybe even sensation of pain in the body. You know, and so when patients feel like they're in control, they feel less pain in their body. That's very interesting. And then the fact with the nature stuff, by you just integrating nature into your life, you need less pain medication and your body heals faster. You know, so something that's interesting with the plant stuff, it's not just oxygenating the air, it's not just filtering the air. There's some deeper rooted connection with you putting yourself around nature, around plants. It causes your body to start to spin a little bit faster. It causes it to feel a little bit safer, whatever the deep system is. I don't know what it is, but research suggests that your body will heal faster, more effectively by having some nature. And then the other side tangential idea is, you know, feeling like you're in control also makes your body work well as well. It's kind of two separate things, but both in relation to patients inside of a hospital room.
No, it's good. I mean, I feel like it was sort of a really quick decision to be like, all right, we're out of here. This has been sort of miserable for a month to not have like those releases that would take care of what would feel like a small, because we were in a small apartment for like 9 years in Brentwood, but we had our little things. Like we had our, you know, runs to the grocery store. We had our yoga classes. We had the beaches we'd go to. And then they were closing LA beaches and everyone's dealing with like the closure of everything. And I was like, I don't want to feel closed in. Like I need to feel open. Like I need to be in nature. And it happened really fast, but I will tell you, like it definitely created all the cyclical change, just craving nature, wanting to be in it more, putting yourself in a place that makes it easier to be in that environment, I think can totally change your life. So,
did you notice any less addiction, not assuming that you have addiction to your cell phone, but I'd say most Western people have some like moderate low level of addiction to cell phone. Did you notice any less engagement with your phone during all of that process or not at all?
Yeah, no, it was majorly, because what happens is whenever I go on vacation, because my business is so integrated into sharing socially online and tips and articles I've written or whatever, it sort of has become a little bit more of a job thing for me. My phone to me is not like an escape from my job. Actually, it sort of represents my job. And so when it comes down to me going on vacation or whatever, I'm the person who doesn't actually do the highlights of their like fun vacation. They're like, where did Kelly go? And it's some of my favorite. Like, I love that. Like I loved that in high school, all I had was AIM. And it'd be like, cool, hey, what's up? But there was no social media and there was no Facebook and no Instagram. And, you know, we were barely connected. You just like had to like show up at your friend's house to hang out. Like that was just, that's like such a better feeling. And I feel that way down here. And Chris and I have joked that like, it feels a little bit like we're on vacation, but it's because of the access to nature. It's absolutely because we are doing it. We're going on morning walks with Sebastian. We can see the surf. We can hike. We can come back. We can work. And then it's like, well, I want to get back out there and see the sunset, or I want to get, you know, and so then you start to incorporate it into your life and then you crave it. I think people make it out to be some like really big thing. Chris was always good at it, but he'd be like, hey, let's go to that park. Like be like 6 o'clock at night, you know? And I think as parents, you're like, there's bedtimes and there's schedules and but just to do that, even 20 minutes of that out there, like laying on the grass on a blanket, you're like, ugh.
I think it's interesting. I think that in relation to the whole hospital, gallbladder, nature, pain medication stuff, I think that the cell phone is the modern pacifier, and social media and all of those things. It's like the modern pain medication. And when you feel out of control, when you are in that situation, where you feel uncomfortable, you feel outcast or whatever it may be, you're outside of the party, you know, the natural thing is pull out the cell phone. Oh, okay. A little pacification.
Right.
And so I think a lot of people, I'm speaking just about myself, we had this low level sensation of feeling out of control in our lives. You know, feeling like, where am I going? And what is the point of any of this? And does any of the shit that I do even matter? Like, what?
I've got a lot of that. Don't get me wrong.
What are we doing? Hinge your hips? Who cares? Shut up, Aaron. You know? And so there's within that, there's that low level sensation of like existential kind of purposelessness sensation that sometimes I experience with pretty decent regularity. And I notice that my pacifier is my cell phone, you know, and and I'll reach out when I'm in more of that numb type sensation, which would be perhaps that hospital patient that feels out of control, they'll reach for more pacification. They'll reach for more numbing agent. Yeah. And so I think it's an interesting thing just to like have another check in with yourself, the same way you're checking your body language. Notice how dependent are you on reaching for that phone and reaching for your notifications and your Facebooks and your emails and your texts and then. Because every time you get that subtle, low level, you know, whatever you would call it, dopamine hit, you get that little like, oh, you know. And so I think what I personally noticed that I think is just such a big deal is when I do go to this, I just went to Zion National Park like a few days ago. I didn't look at my phone hardly at all. I did a couple like little Instagram videos of like, you know, when you're hiking, do this with your hips, blah, blah. And then like, all right, phone down, we're done. That was cool. Yeah. Great. You know, but that whole trip, I looked at my phone maybe, I don't know, 9 times. You know, I look at my phone 9 times and like, 20 minutes when I'm in that low level kind of numb LA sensation that sometimes creeps up on me. I'm like, who, this can't happen to me. I'm supposed to be the guy that doesn't do this. So I think it's something to just a little suggestion, you know, if people dare kind of start to look at that. And if there is a lot of pulling that phone out of the pocket, I wonder if perhaps there is something that we can do to kind of like take more control of our lives. There's an interesting documentary I just watched called The Social Dilemma. Did you see that?
I haven't watched it yet. It's on my list.
All right, I highly recommend watch. I'm not going to go too deep into it, but it is very interesting to think that like the algorithm that has been created to grab your attention within all of those different social media platforms, it doesn't have a conscience. It's out of the control of the people that created it. There's no like malicious intent. It's like they made this thing as good as it possibly could be at grabbing your attention. Not because they hate you. It's just they wanted to do a good job. Well, right. Now they did a great job. And now they're all addicted to it. Yeah. You know, and it's like it's out of control. I reflect on this after having those trips of like how much of my life, at the end of my life, will I look up? I mean, it's months of my life that I've thrown away to scrolling in my phone.
I know.
Like all those times, if I could go back and grab that back up and like kiss a girl or go hike a mountain, like there's so many things. Yeah. Anyways,
it's true. You know what I think? I mean, even just times that, like, if you took all the time that you spent scrolling social media and said, "I want to redirect that time and like read books and learn," like.
Oh man.
How much more of a complex human being you would be. But the problem is all the social media stuff is bite-sized bits and the attention span. Like, I'm sure there are people listening to this podcast. They're like, yeah, okay, I got the tips on like my body now. I'm going to turn this off. They're going on a tangent about social media, like the Social Dilemma documentary. But we just don't have the attention span to do things anymore. And we want those quick fixes and we want that hit of dopamine. And it's, you know, it's sort of like baked into our culture right now. But yeah, I think nature does the best job of calming the nervous system and letting the body just be okay with being.
Yeah. Just go outside. It's not complicated. Your body knows how to heal. Yeah. Your body knows how to do all this shit. You know, that you don't need to buy something. Like right. You can buy a pull-up bar, whatever. It's $30. You don't
need to buy the pull-up bar.
Go find a tree ranch, whatever.
You sold me the pull-up bar. Yeah.
Like you literally, your body is craving to do the right thing.
Right.
It's craving to do the thing that opens up those, you know, your nervous system and your lymphatic system and your arteries and your veins and your immune system. And you're like, it wants those tubes to be like full fire. It wants to go. You know, but if you don't give it the information, then, you know, it's going to only be able to live up to the information that you give it. You know, so I personally feel like I noticed this walking down. I go down to, I'm going to go right after this. Actually, I'm going to go play paddle tennis in Venice Beach area. And going down Venice Beach, I see all of these people walking down on the boardwalk area. And a lot of people are, there's a lot of really beautiful, but everybody's beautiful in their way. But a lot of times there's a lot of like, you know, just people are really overweight or it seems like they're really tired or people are maybe really drug addicted and there's tons of homelessness everywhere. You know, and this is this really interesting, all these different swaths of different types of people. And what I see with every one of those people is I see this, their highest potential, this like bright star, like your child. You know, you see that light of just like, wow, it's just all, it's just like infinite potential. You know, like every person has their highest expression of themselves inside there. And then throughout life and throughout stories and throughout, you know, all of the different things, we start making these decisions. Those decisions get deeper and deeper and deeper. They become ruts and they pull us away from that kernel of what, you know, what we could have been. I feel like I'm getting a little bit like overly metaphysical Eckhart Tolle right now, but it's an interesting thing to think of, like, look at yourself in the mirror and just ask yourself, am I giving myself the environmental conditions and the information for me to have like that, my highest self expressed out in this lifetime? And if the answer is yes, awesome. like boom, like great. For a lot of people listening to this, probably if they arrive to you, it probably a high percentage of people are probably like, yeah, I'm doing that. You know, but for a lot of people, I think if you were really honest with yourself,
I'm not even doing things, that.
I'm not doing that either. I'm maybe 70% Aaron, I think. Yeah.
That's why our generation, that's why so many of us are interested in self-care, in growth and self-help and understanding, like, we want that. We want that infinite potential. We want that, like, we want to be the brightest star that we can be. And we don't want to be our own roadblock. We don't want our stories to define us. We really want to be able to say, like, I feel confident enough to walk into that party without my cell phone, whether I shook my shoulders out or hung on a tree. I got this. Like, bring your energy, bring your posture, and like show up. We all want to show up. But sometimes we need reminders because, you know, things like social media, things like our comfy couches, things like not even wanting to, you know how many clients I have who don't want to make dinner because they don't want to have to do the dishes after because they've already had a long day. Like you just, yeah. You talked about that. Like you make the food, you have to clean up after yourself. Like if you're adding work, you're adding activity, but what if you didn't think of it as being uncomfortable and you've thought about it like growth? And I think that's what you're sharing with the world, which is so freaking awesome.
Yeah. I appreciate getting to talk to you about all these things, Kelly.
Yeah. And I'm super stoked about my new pull-up bar. And
get that pull-up bar, girl.
I have a meditation pillow, but I always just sit cross-legged on the floor with Bash, but I'm gonna prop the pillow just because I probably would sit longer. Yeah. And I feel like you've dropped some nuggets today. So one last question, and then I want you to tell everyone where they can get the book and get all of the tips so that they can live their most aligned life. So the last question is, what does body love mean to you?
The word that comes to mind is acceptance. That's the only thing that comes to mind. I think that within that, I can hear little tendrils of like, non-acceptance of the people that I see on like the boardwalk, where I'm like, ah, oh, man, that person's addicted to drugs, or that person's it's whatever. I also hear on the other side of that, perhaps I have an addiction to a lack of acceptance to these other types of lifestyles and choices and all of that. And I think that the way through to get to the other side of anything, I think, is through actually like loving the thing. The thing that's the hardest to love is probably like, that's where the work is for you or for me or for, you know, just for me, I guess I could say. And so I think that would probably be the thing, is acceptance would be, I think, body love. And then from there, when you can come into full acceptance, I think that opens up the spaciousness for growth.
I love it. I don't think you're the only one that feels that way. I think it's about loving where you're at and loving the journey, not only loving yourself when you get to that destination.
Well, that's just a game. you're training yourself to be dissatisfied. It'll go on until you die. The moment that you come into the moment of like, okay, like love the journey, you know, which again, I'm in practice with this. I'm trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
But you know, in theory, I think it makes quite a bit of sense. If you continually practice always having a carrot in front of you, that is just a story that you play. It's like your software programming and you need to update your software.
Yeah. There you go. Well, Aaron, it was a pleasure. It was so fun. I can't believe you've been on like one knee and then the other this entire time. Well, I just sit here in my Western chair. Yeah, no, I saw the switch. Where can people find you? Where can they get the book? Where can they follow along?
Well, I will hopefully have you on my podcast, which is the Align Podcast. And we can, you know, whenever we can do that. I like to do them in person, ideally. But maybe we can do it remote as well. We figured out. But Align Podcast, that's a place. That's the same Instagram. Everything is just Align Podcast. You press that in the internet, it'll happen. And then the book is The Align Method. You know, if you press that in the internet, that'll happen too.
I love it. Well, thanks for sharing your tips. I hope that everyone gets on the ground for 30 minutes today. And focuses on their posture while they just strut through the world.
Yeah. And if people want to go deeper into like the actual nuts and bolts mechanics of all this stuff, we created a whole Align Method online program that also can be found at my Instagram page and also at thealignpodcast.com. So the online program is a great place to go if you want to actually go in and do the work to start to change the structure of your body in a pretty simplistic, easy to do way. So we break down that path into a 6-week program as well. So that's also an option that exists.
Great. Everyone loves online learning right now. And they sometimes videos for movement is key.
Books are great, but I think that both, having like the actual video thing is a nice experience. And then hopefully soon we can all actually be in the same room together.
Yeah.
If that ever happens again.
Sitting on the floor somewhere.
Crazy.
Cool. Well, yeah. Aaron, that was a blast. Thanks so much for coming on the show. And I'll see you soon.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com. And follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.